and welcome to the D1 Softball Podcast. I'm your host, Tara Henry. As always, we are excited to bring you the best of the best in college softball. After the show, head on over to d1softball.com for all the latest news, scores, stories, and more. If you subscribe today, you can use podcast 20, that's P-O-D-C-A-S-T 20 for 20% off an annual subscription. We are excited for today's new episode that features Lauren Laporte from JMU. Joined by my co-host, Rhiannon Potke. Rhi, how are you doing this week? Happy, happy new year.
Happy new year. I'm so glad that we're on to 2022. We got, you know, teams getting back on the field, starting workouts, getting prepared. The season's less than, it's like 40 days away, close to. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling, other than this, you know, it's a little colder here than it is where you are. We've had some snow here, so I'm hoping that quickly goes away so we can get back to the spring feeling of sports. But other than that, doing great. How was your new year? Happy new year to you.
Thank you. It was good. We had some rain here in California, colder-ish temperatures, but we're back to regularly scheduled programming. It's sunny, I think, in 65 here. So I can't complain. But this week, We have some softball news. In the first week, we have the U.S. Olympic Women's National Team Trials. They're in Florida. They started this week. And, you know, we've seen loads of players fly across the country. You know, we're still dealing with COVID. Omicron 5 did not actually make the trip, but they're there now. And we've got some reports down from the trials of some more players that have tested positive and had to leave. But at the end of the day, there's not a really great time for them to do these trials, but I always find it interesting that it's the first kind of week in January that they do them.
Yeah, it's just interesting, especially, you know, I mean, obviously there's no Olympics to be preparing for right now. So you kind of wonder, like, you know, I know there's some big world events and championships and things that are still be taking place, but you know, when is a good time for tryouts, especially, you know, you want to include the college kids and then the, so I don't think there ever is a great time, and you got to have the coaching staff from Washington have time off. So kind of squeeze it in right before the official practices and season start seems like probably the best time, just so they can fully focus on their season once they start that.
And they've done some drills and simulated games. They've done games. So all the pitchers have thrown, and then they've got another kind of BP pitcher that has thrown to the hitter. So we'll see what happens. They should be announcing the team here, the selection for it. I mean, we did talk about the World Games in Birmingham. I think that is the biggest kind of next event for the U.S. Women's National Team. And Taylor Pleasance is hitting some bombs down there. Some of the catchers, Kinsey Hansen, Gwen Svetkus, Charlize Palacios as well, have been doing some well behind the plate. And so we'll, as soon as we have some more updates out of the U.S. Women's National Team trials, we'll get those going. So that's Olympic ball. Then we have fall reports up on the site. We've got Oklahoma was put up on Friday of last week. OU, Graham Hayes did an incredible job just talking about OU, the juggernaut that it is. I mean, they just keep reloading over there. Patty Gasso, JT Gasso. They've got Hope Trotwine coming in as a transfer from North Texas and return most of that prolific offense that we saw all season long. Rhi, any other thoughts on Oklahoma?
Yeah, just the idea that they want to be like, Patty's like, we need to be better. We need to be perfect. It's like, and I get it. Like you have to have that mindset, but it's like, okay, like that is a real high bar. And the scary thing is, you know, they very well could be, who knows, but she doesn't, you know, that she doesn't settle. She doesn't settle. So they're looking to kind of elevate. And that's what jumped out to me is really like, we can take it higher. We can do better. And that's, you know, I think that's scary for some of the pitchers that may be pitching against them. But I'm excited to see kind of what they do. You know, you hopefully some teams have hangovers after national championships. Others don't. It kind of depends on, you know, but it sounds like she's just, you know, hey, we're right back at it. Like we're shooting for higher. And so I'm interested to see how they come out and kind of deal with some of those inherent pressures of not only the championship, but just the numbers they put up last season too.
That's the fall report on Oklahoma, the Sooners, up on d1softball.com. Then we have Northwestern. Brady Vernon talked a little bit about Danielle Williams, not a little bit, a lot about Danielle Williams. She's done an incredible job over there as a two-way player, just kind of led that team. And they're excited to get out of just conference-only play. Northwestern, again, that Big Ten did the conference-only. So we'll be seeing them all throughout the country there. And then we had Howard yesterday. I did a report on Howard. Sounds like they're going to be, you know, reloading and just as they get as good as they were last year. They've got Camille Navarro, who was the player of the year, and she is a part of our D1 Player Society. So excited to get some content for her from her going into the season. So that's Howard. And Ree, you did an incredible story this week on Sarah Taffet from Fordham University. If you haven't read this story, you need to go on the site right now and understand the importance of AD. Reed, tell me a little bit about what happened, just the series of events that led to her being on the field and how they came about. Tell me a little bit about what happened.
Yeah, well, Fordham has had a fall ball game back in October against Villanova at a public park in New Jersey. And she hit a ball to first base, got tagged out, kind of hard tag, fell down, but felt fine, got back up, started jogging the dugout and collapsed and her heart stopped. So she was literally dead on the field for a little bit. And the only thing that was there to save her was the trainer decided to travel with the team, which she usually doesn't do, but she felt like she had to be there because it was at a public park. And she brought her AED, which is obviously something that can shock a heart back to life. So as they were pouring CPR, they shocked her. She came back to life. They took her to the ambulance to the hospital. They couldn't really figure out what was wrong. They thought it was just a freak accident, something that, you know, just the heart went, the rhythm went off. But more testing in ensuing weeks at Columbia University discovered that she had this rare congenital heart condition where most kids die. If they don't discover it before one, they pretty much are destined to die at some point after if it's not discovered. So she literally could have dropped dead at any point in the last 20 years, at any point. Just so happened that because that tag was applied and that there was medical personnel around and an AED right there, that the time that the heart decided to do it, she was able to get saved and discover this. And she had open heart surgery and now she's on the road to recovery. She still expects to play this season. But just the things that had to line up to keep the, to, you know, all in it. If you, like I said, if you believe in like a higher power, the story will reaffirm that, because there was just so many things that had to go into making sure that she lived and that fell into place. And I got to talk to the coaches, the trainer, her dad, just so many people involved in this story. And every time my jaw dropped, like, really? Like that happened? The coach that recruited her to Fordham, Bridget Orchard, was coaching Villanova. So she was there to watch the whole thing. It was just kind of nuts, but it's a really good story in terms of the awareness of AEDs. There's so many youth travel tournaments, high schools that don't have these, and the only time you need them, it's worth all the money that you would ever spend on them because it will save a life. I know the NCAA highly encourages it. I put some statistics in the story in terms of what they encourage, but a lot of these youth tournaments, youth programs, really should consider investing into one of these because it can save a life. And it's more common in kids too, with some of these, not just softball, but baseball, every sort of youth sport. So she really never knew about that. And she actually, the kicker in the story is that she was carrying the bag to the field that had the AED in it. She didn't know. And she was complaining, like, why do I have to carry this stupid red bag to the field? And then within a few hours, that thing in the red bag saved her life. So now she's a big proponent of AEDs. So it kind of makes the hair on, you know, my arm stand up just listening to it. And her dad, just the emotion in his voice, you know, talking to him through the whole thing was really, I mean, him alone would just make you convince you that every place needs an AED nearby.
Incredible story. Ree did put up on the site, and head on over to d1softball.com to get the full scoop. That part that you talked about of her carrying the actual AED bag, like her wondering why she was carrying it, that I thought, oh my gosh, what, that is just, you know, you're right. It's a higher power. There was a reason that she was carrying it that day, and glad she's okay. And hope we get to see her back on the field heading into season. So That's it for the news on the site. Head on over to d1softball.com. And Rhea, I'm going to let you introduce our guest of the week. Fantastic chatting with our guest this week. She was super fun.
Yeah, JMU's Lauren Laporte. Obviously, everyone remembers the great run they had in the World Series last year. We've talked to her for stories, but we definitely wanted to have her on the pod, and it was as good as we expected. So we'll let you listen to what Lauren had to say about the run last year, the new team coming back this year, and a whole bunch of other stuff and things about her, you know, amusement parks and sushi too.
All right, here's Lauren Laporte from JMU.
We are now joined on the D1 Softball Podcast by JMU's Lauren Laporte. Laporte is in her fifth season at JMU and led the Dukes to that magical Women's College World Series run last season. For the first time in program history, they reached Oklahoma City. JMU's 148-34 in Laporte's time at the helm, including 56-4 in conference play with two conference titles. Pretty impressive, as we've seen. So we definitely had to have her on entering, you know, the first week of practice with 2022 teams getting back on the field. Thank you so much for joining us today, Lauren.
Well, thank you for having me. I don't even know those numbers. So sometimes I learn information when I'm on these podcasts.
Pretty impressive.
We're happy to provide the stats and analytics, you know, that's good. See, that's probably why you have those numbers, is because you don't like look at them and you don't obsess over them. So, but yeah, obviously we have talked about JMU more than in this last year, I think, than probably people have talked about you guys in 50 years combined before that, because of just the magical run you guys had. And coming off that World Series, we did a fall report. It's a massive rebuild with youth this season, as we've talked about, and you've kind of embraced that. How did the fall go with all that transition? Because you do have a lot of new blood in that program, and it's definitely a lot of starters you graduated. How was that fall transition gone heading into now spring?
Well, you know, there was a lot of excitement and energy coming off the year, but like you said, we are such a different team as far as our dynamic and the youth. And, you know, as a coaching staff, we had to break down a lot of things. And we took for, you know, when you have such a veteran squad, you kind of take for granted the little things, because, you know, your team is so used to doing the same things every day. Well, you know, when we first got back from the summer, it was crazy, and it how we had to break down every fundamental, every philosophy that we teach. But I felt like the girls, you know, worked hard and learning the things that we do. And I think, you know, they're excited. You know, they were excited to go home and work on their game. We had end of fall evaluations and kind of told, you know, each player where they were at, what they needed to work on. So I'm excited to have them back. We actually have 2 more weeks before they get back. So our first team practice is January 16th. That Sunday. So they come in on that Saturday and then we get started. So we have a little bit more time, which I wish we were getting started this week. But that's just how, you know, our calendar works. But it was a great fall. It really was. And I'm excited for this season.
Yeah, I imagine that, you know, you have to kind of damper a little bit of the expectations, you know, outside. I'm sure they're still like, oh, they're going to be great again. And obviously that's the goal. But with all those newness, you kind of have to make sure there's not much pressure on those players, because this is a new team. Is that difficult to do, to kind of let them know, like, you don't have to live up to everything that they set last year?
Yeah. And, you know, we didn't really talk about last year that much this fall. You know, obviously we had some celebrations here and there with our ring ceremony and some events that we did, but as a team, when we were together, when we were practicing, we didn't talk about the past. We are a new team. We have to figure out our identity, and kind of, you know, move past the World Series, even though that's hard to do sometimes. It was very important not to bring up a lot of things from last year's season. We had to move forward. I think, you know, just with that, it helped the players. Yes, they felt the pressure, especially in our first fall games, because you have the fans and everybody talking about last year, but it's very important that kind of we stay who we are now as a new team in 2022. So
we're going to break that rule. So we're going to ask you about the time, because I think a lot of our audience would like to hear, just not too much in depth, but just what was it like? You've had time to reflect now a lot of time, and you've been asked about, I'm sure, millions of times, but what was it like to go through that time at the World Series? And you seem to walk the perfect line of like being focused, but yet embracing the fact that you guys were going on this special run. And I, not many, that's hard to do. And you did it with such grace and tact. And I was very impressed with that. What was it like going through that?
You know, what, when I reflect back, I think about just the adversity and the way that the team was able to handle the hard and everything that was thrown at them. You know, that helped that we were veterans and all of our, you know, seniors and super seniors had been to a postseason in every single year of their career, but they didn't let the moments get too big. And I think that's the biggest thing when you're in the postseason, you have to act like you belong. And being that it was our first time, that's something our staff was nervous about. Like, when was the pressure going to really set in where they got scared or they got nervous or they got intimidated? And that never happened. And they stuck together. It was probably the best team chemistry our staff has ever been a part of, to be completely honest. We've had some very talented teams, but this team was so close and truly had each other's back, whether it was, you know, people in the dugout, role players, like, everybody supported each other. And that's hard to do, especially in this day and age with the transfer portal and people wanting playing time and not really liking their role. That was kind of what set us apart in the years past of when we did win championships and go to regionals and went to super regionals. All of those things kind of came together. And that's kind of what we've talked to the upperclassmen about this fall. Like, what were the things that really set us apart and what were the things that got us through, you know, to the World Series? And I think our seniors are doing a good job at those things and just creating a good team culture.
Yeah, I think the best part, just from like outside looking in, was you guys still were able to have fun there and still able to embrace all the, you know, the stuff that was on around you and not be able to just be so focused that you kind of like, okay, we can't focus it. You were able to kind of balance both. Was that something that you consciously did, or did that just come naturally to you to make sure that you took on, you know, you kind of lived in the moment?
Yeah, I think that's one thing that I have learned in the past. You know, when we beat Michigan and Ann Arbor the year in 2019 and then went to UCLA for Supers, I don't feel like I embraced the moment as a coach. It was on to the next. We were thinking about what was next. We were tight. And this year, I think all of us as a staff, all of our coaches made sure to always tell the girls, like, love this, because this is something you don't get back a lot of times. So love the fan engagement, love all the little girls coming up to you and crying and wanting your autograph, because it's going to go away at some point in your life. And I think that our girls just loved it all and embraced it all. And they saw how much of an impact, you know, they made on so many people. And, you know, being, I guess you can say, the Cinderella team and the mid-major teams, you know, it doesn't happen in our sport very often. I think they kind of took on a different, a bigger role. It wasn't just about JMU softball anymore. It was about a lot of other things and being able to do it as an underdog.
That was, yeah, it's exactly what I always say, the underdog, like the Cinderella with, you know, quotes around it, because softball knows it's not quite Cinderella, but the mid-major representation is a Cinderella thing that we love. So that's great. And you, coming off that run, even before that, you were, you know, I know your name, you know, hot commodity in the coaching industry with Power Five jobs coming open, but you signed an 8-year contract extension, I mean, right off that, which is something I think surprised a lot of people, only because of that fact, like, you could have left for, you know, quote unquote, bigger jobs. Why did you do that? Why did you decide you wanted to stay where you were?
You know, I talk to the girls all the time about family, and, you know, family is very important to me. I'm at a time in my life, I have two very young kids. I have a 1-year-old and a 6-year-old. So I had a baby last year. So it was a whirlwind of a year, that's for sure. But not very often can you coach in a place where you're supported by your administration, the community is all in, you're technically a softball school, and be in a state where your entire family is in. So my husband is actually from here. So we have all of his side of the family right here in Stanton and Harrisonburg. And then my side of the family is 2.5 hours away. So that was very important to me and the decision on staying in Harrisonburg. and having my kids, you know, my own kids grow up with their grandparents and aunts and uncles and cousins, like that doesn't happen in this career very often. And it was something that, you know, I wanted for me personally.
Well, that's great. I think it's it shows too, like be where your feet are, enjoy what you have. I think that's a great message. I mean, there's nothing wrong with, you know, quote unquote climbing, but I think you know that you have something that can be big right there. And on that mm-hmm. note, you guys obviously JMU, if anyone's paying attention, we've talked about on the pod moving conferences and that, you know, the OU Texas like cataclysmic domino effect that happened there with everyone moving everywhere. But you guys are going from the Colonial to the Sun Belt. But correct. In that move, cannot contend for Colonial Conference titles now until you obviously make that move. How do you feel about that? I mean, you can, first of all, talk, you know, the move itself, what that might do to you, but then just trying to reconcile with the fact that you really can't win a title this year.
I mean, I think our first reaction was, you know, yeah, I was disappointed just because all the conferences or all the schools that move conferences are still allowed to play in that conference championship until they move out. And we're the only conference that declined our waiver. So I think, you know, it's hard for our seniors to not get that chance to compete for a conference championship. But, you know, it is what it is. And it is in the bylaws. And we're not the first team to have to experience this. You know, Georgia State, Old Dominion, there's several teams that have left our conference that have had to deal with not being able to compete in their spring sports. So it's not like we're the first. I think the hardest thing is, you know, with everything with COVID and some of our seniors already losing a year of eligibility, I think that was kind of the mindset of why other schools were still able to play. But like I told our team, there's nothing that we can do. You know, yes, you can have a voice on social media and I'm, you know, I'm all for it. But at the end of the day, like we got to move on from it and figure out another way. And, you know, I feel like we've put together a schedule where we, you know, if we can compete and get a high RPI, we have a chance to get an at-large. You know, yes, is it harder to do at the mid-major level? Yes, but we've been in situations where we've gotten it before. So that's kind of the route and the mindset that we have going into the season.
Just another thing for this team. It's great, man. They're learning like right at the bat, like, hey, these are the hurdles. So let's scale them. So
correct.
As we speak right now, the you know, the U.S. national team trials are going on down in Florida. You, JMU, has two representatives there with Odyssey Alexander and Jack Ford, the pitch, you know, great pitcher. Have you been following that? How much is a pride does it give you to know that there's two JMU players even in that pool, which is a really, really prestigious pool to make just to be honored with the tryouts?
Yeah, when I saw their names, you know, listed, and when they told me, you know, they got the phone call, I was just so excited and proud that, you know, we're, you know, able to send players to represent, you know, our country. And I've talked to them both, and they're doing well. They feel good about it. They said, you know, it is a lot of talent and a lot of good ball players, but they feel like they're competing. And that's all that I ask, you know, whatever happens at the end of the day, you gave it all you got. And that's kind of what I told them going into the week.
Lauren, how did you get on the coaching path? Because you've had obviously great success, but when did you know you wanted to be a coach and kind of how did you get your start in the coaching industry?
Yeah, well, a little bit of it is luck, not going to lie. I got very lucky. But my senior year in college, I played at Roanoke College. My college coach knew I wanted to get into coaching. So I was a education major, thinking I was going to teach and coach at the high school level, and got very lucky. My coach asked me in my spring season of my senior year if I wanted to come back next fall and be his assistant, because our assistant was leaving for an AD job at another high school. And I said, absolutely. I had to finish my student teaching. Everything worked out. So I coached at Roanoke College. That's kind of where I got my feet wet. And, you know, the hardest part for me was being able to, you know, draw that line between, you know, being friends with the players, because some of them were still my best friends, and really being their coach. So that was an adjustment, but it taught me to grow up really fast. And then that summer, I was coaching a 23 and under team, and I had four Rafford players playing on the team. And they told me that their coach, Mickey Dean, was looking for a part-time assistant and that they put my name in. I was like, okay. So, he was, you know, Mickey's with the Chicago Bandits at the time. So he wasn't even in Virginia. So I applied for it. He gave me, you know, he gave me a phone interview, and it was probably about a 4 to 5 minute interview. And he was like, "You're hired. Go into the office next week. They'll show you what to do. I won't be there till August." And this was like, oh my gosh, what is happening? And you know, Division III and Division I is very different. Recruiting is very different. Just the life is very different. Mickey got there in August, and I was with him for 10 years at Radford, and then moved to JMU with him. And then when he got the Auburn job, I had a baby. I had a 3-month-old, you know, my 6-year-old was 3 months old. And I felt like if I ever wanted to be a head coach, this was the opportunity to try it. And if I didn't like it, I would go back to being an assistant. And it luckily has been great. So that's kind of my story in a nutshell.
Wow. That's awesome. Yeah. Hey, go in and just start, and I'll be there soon. And just, you get things started. Okay, sure. Mick, I know Mickey was really proud. He was having fun watching this run. I know he said he talked to you often on the phone. He wanted to be there, but that's awesome that he trusted you. And then look at what it did. So that's great. He saw.
Yeah,
you
know, he did. That
So. Well, we should probably give credit to your players, man. Those under 23 girls, they saw something in you. They knew it. That's a,
yeah. It was awesome. And I, you know, I still talk to those girls. We actually have one of our senior first basemen is her sister. So she, you know, she's at games all the time. And she was probably one of the best shortstops to ever play the game. One that probably the best I've ever coached.
Really?
So they'll have a relationship. Yeah. Kristen Shiflett was her name. Yeah. So yeah, she plays for the USA slow pitch team now.
Wow. Look at this.
Yeah. That's I know.
I love stories. That's so awesome. Well, I know you're, you know, you're out there, you're planning for practices come up, though you can't workouts and things with coach, so we won't keep you much longer, but love to kind of just end with some fun ones. Just, I know as a mom of two, and I'm sure the free time is really not free time ever, but do you have any hobbies outside of softball, or, you know, that you really enjoy that kind of gets you to turn off a little bit and just be able to do something fun outside of the game, the sport?
Yeah. I mean, we like to go on a lot of adventures. You know, we take the kids to the water parks, amusement parks. I mean, you've name it, we've probably done it. We go on hikes. We try to get out of the house and do a lot of different things. And honestly, it's a time for me where I can just turn my phone off and leave it in the car and kind of have an excuse saying, "Hey, I'm here with the kids and I'm doing this." And we have so many things in Virginia to take the kids to. We have a water park. We have a ski resort. I mean, we do so much just outside of, just being at home. You know, during the COVID year, I'm not going to lie, you know, I spent a lot of time in the woods. We own, about 4 acres, and we have a lot of woods on our property. So my son and I, built a lot of forts and a lot of trails because we couldn't go anywhere. So that was something that, was kind of new, but it was nice because that's stuff you don't do. You did it when you were growing up as a kid. But we were kind of forced to do it all over again when we couldn't go anywhere in the COVID year. But yeah, we like to get out and take the kids on a lot of different adventures.
That's awesome. Any favorite amusement park rec, or do you go on all the rides too? Are you a rides person, or do you
person? My husband is not. So I am the roller coaster mom. So yeah, we actually went to King's Dominion, for the winter Christmas land thing a couple weeks ago, and it was so much fun. We took both kids there, a lot of people. So that was a little nerve wracking, but, you know, we kept our distance and it was all outside. We took them to the water park. We've taken them to rock climbing walls that we have here, right in Harrisonburg. So we've tried to do a lot, with them.
Good, man. The adventurous mom. That's one of my favorites. I love hearing that.
Yeah,
it's awesome. That's great. We'll leave you on this last one. It was, like I said, quirky things to end, but if you had one meal to celebrate a major milestone, what is your go-to meal if you had to celebrate something big in your life?
Sushi.
Really?
Yep. And it's something that I don't eat a whole lot of because I wouldn't say we have really good sushi restaurants here. And my husband does not eat it. But I love sushi. So anytime we get away, you know, when we were at convention, getting ready to go to Nashville for the NFCA coaches clinic, definitely trying to find a sushi spot. And all of the nice thing is Jen and Libby both love sushi. So, you know, when we go on staff, lunches or dinners, we always try to find that.
Wow. That is. Yeah. I, you know, not to put anything down in Harrisonburg, but I just imagine it a little harder. No fresh fish right there. Like right on the, yeah, but that's good. Well, anytime now, anytime we know what to get, you know, if we have you in a city that's sushi friendly, like if Tara brings you out to the West Coast, we can do a lot of sushi places out there. So
absolutely. Yeah, we've got all the best sushi out here. I mean, yeah. Palm Springs, maybe not, but I'm sure we could get something out in Palm Springs if you guys are out in Mary Nutter. But we've got some
good sushi. I came to recruit at Huntington Beach. Mickey and I went to a sushi place. Oh gosh, it's near Fountain Valley, and it was so good. It was kind of in a mall. So we always try to find a spot too, because when we go recruiting, you know, we always link up and have dinner. And usually our go-to spot is a sushi place.
Yeah, when I was living out in Cali for 30 some years, strip mall sushi actually is almost always the better sushi. Like, they have all these famous restaurants, but you go to like a local strip mall, like, and you're like, that place was awesome. So yeah, yep. I agree. You can find it anywhere in California. You can walk like any mile and you'll find like 7. So, well, that's great. And yeah, let everyone know too. I know you're going to be in Nashville for the NFCA. They have coaching clinics, the ones they put on. So you're heading out there in this whole weekend, so that should be fun. Who's there, and what are you guys planning on doing, do you think?
Yeah, so it's a lot of just like presentations. I'm talking about practice planning, some of my favorite hitting drills, full team defense. I think JT Gasso will be out there, Michelle from Washington, Shonda from Indiana, I think it's gonna be there, Tori Tyson from Howard. I think it's us four. So super excited. They're all great coaches, and exciting just to honestly to learn from them as well.
Yeah, those are always fun, and everyone that needs to, you can check out NFCA's Twitter or website. They've got tons if you're a coach out there and you want to learn. I mean, those are just such great events to do, and there's so many. It really impresses me how much the coaches give their time to do those and around the country. So well, this has definitely been one of our a guest that we've wanted forever. We knew you were really popular coming off that. We wanted you back to kind of settle down, but we appreciate it. We'd love to have you on as the season, gets started, and we'll definitely have you on as a guest. And if we ever have any amusement park or sushi places we want to fans want to go to or know about, we'll hit you up for that too.
That's great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us on the D1 Softball Podcast.
Lauren Laporte, JMU, James Madison University. For those that don't know JMU, I'm sure everybody at this point knows JMU, but James Madison University. Always great to chat with coaches, and super excited that she loves sushi. I think we're going to have some sushi with her soon, Ree.
Yeah, well, yeah, man, I'm all up for it. Like, especially, like she said, well, if we're ever in the same city all together, I'll treat everyone to sushi. If we can just get some good softball talk over sushi, we're always about that.
Yeah, and I actually was able to listen to Lauren. We didn't get into this in the interview, but she spoke at the NFCA convention and talked about that championship run and talked about her team. And they were so focused on their mission and never really were impacted by the bright lights or the, Oklahoma City and the big stadium. And I think we saw that, Ree, while we were there. I think you could tell they were really cool, calm, and collected. And I think that's a direct reflection of her and her coaching staff and how they prepared them to be in, the biggest stage and not have it impact them. So just really thankful she came on the show. I know we've been trying to get her on here for a while, and she's been a hot ticket, like you said, after that Women's College World Series run.
Yeah, I didn't want to. I knew she, like I said, we've had her for stories and kind of wanted to make sure that we didn't stretch her too thin and wear out the, but she's always so great about doing media, and she's just really, you can tell she's really savvy at it, and just because she's herself and really interested to see how this team does and see, it's new blood. So it's kind of, for a coaching staff, that's kind of scary, but it's also fun. You kind of get to, teach everyone, from the basics on down. So it'll be an interesting season. I'm interested to see how they do. So we'll look forward to having her back on soon.
And we did the pitching circle interview with Alyssa Humphreys and Odyssey Alexander right before the World Series. So Alyssa's going to have to step into those big shoes, but she was a 14 game winner in her own right last year. So I think, their pitching staff is going to be just as it was, and excited to see how she steps up in the circle.
Yeah, because Odyssey was injured for most of the year. So, I mean, obviously she had to shoulder some of that. So it's not going to be unfamiliar to her. So they definitely start well there. And she's obviously on the junior national team. So she's got some of that experience coming in too.
Well, that's it for the first podcast of 2022. Head on over to d1softball.com. Like, subscribe, If you'd like to get 20% off an annual subscription, use podcast 20. And Ree, any final thoughts for the first week of January?
No, hoping 2022 is a great one for everyone out there. Hoping to provide some great softball. Just really excited about, you know, just a new year. There's always that freshness and new season and practices starting. So hopefully everyone had a great holiday and we can all get back and then start right up in 2022. And make sure, yeah, we're going to have tons of conference previews coming up. So subscribe now because you're going to want to be ready for the season because we're going to hit you with tons of stuff that you're going to want to read.
We'll have some conference previews. We'll have preseason All-Americans, preseason top 25. It's going to get fun over there on D1 Softball. So head on over there. Tara Henry, Rhiannon Potke for the D1 Softball podcast. We'll see you all next week.